Welcome to the Franchise Your Freedom podcast, where we share best practices for investigating, selecting, and building a successful franchise. I'm David Weaver, a franchise investor, franchise consultant, and your host. I interview successful franchisees and franchisors so you can hear from them what it takes and what it's like to successfully start, build, and sell a franchise for yourself. Let's get started. Today, I've got Kevin Henderson, a successful franchisee with CertaPro Painters. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, David.
So, Kevin, tell me a little bit about your background, how you decided to get into franchising, kind of what was your corporate story that kind of drove the transition to start your own business, and maybe why CertaPro?
Yeah, I don't know if it's appropriate for us to go all the way back to Culver Woodcraft Camp, but you and I have known each other for a long time. David and I went to the same summer camp for 6 weeks in Culver, Indiana. And I think even then is when you start learning a little bit about yourself and about what you're capable of doing. You're thrust into this 6 week overnight stay camp and you're kind of on your own with your buddies there. And so I think that's where some things started for me, believe it or not. Neither of my parents or my uncle, who was a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, nobody really modeled the entrepreneur thing for me as a young person. So it sort of grew, and it took me until I was 40 years old until I really got into it. But I think the one place where the spark kind of got lit early in my professional career was I was running a home services business as a branch manager for a franchise system that has franchise owners, but they also have, let's say, 40 to 60 what they call branch managers. And that was me. That's what I did, first job out of college. And I learned how to look at a P&L. I learned how to grow teams and hire people. And I learned a lot about running a business. And they got a lot out of me as a young person. They were definitely, I was working, you know, Saturdays and doing some crazy stuff. But I think I had 80 employees and a $6 million business. And I was 25 years old and thought, this is really cool if I owned this business. And because I didn't own it, I decided it's time to go do something else. And so I went and did medical device sales for 12 years. It was a lot of fun and certainly rewarding, but something was always missing. And I think that entrepreneurial spirit was there, and it was just kept growing and growing and growing. And I think I just didn't feel I didn't have the meaning behind working for someone else. And so I got very interested in starting my own business, and buying a franchise seemed like the right thing because I couldn't come up with my own idea for a business. So I needed to kind of have the model there for me. And then unfortunately, I didn't know you were doing what you were doing. But I hired a franchise broker. We looked at a lot of different opportunities, and I landed on CertaPro. We can dive deeper into that if it's helpful. But yeah, that's kind of how I got there.
Yeah. So I love the synergy between the franchise branch that you were running and the franchise that you ended up landing on. Was there a lot of that in the decision, or finding the similarities in the business models, or was it more about the corporate structure at the franchisor level, or what, you know, their support? Give me a sense of kind of what made CertaPro stand out in your decision-making metrics.
Yeah, I think if anything, I might have been sort of reluctant to get back into the home service business because it's hard. The labor part in our country is still a challenge. And if you're going to do home service, you got to go in knowing that. But it was more about, we looked at like a solar company, which was super exciting. And thank God I didn't do that. It blew up. I looked at things like, you know, exercise places, one called Active RX that was for an older, for, you know, geriatric workout place. And they were doing this thing, and David, you might have to sort of define what this is called, but I think I call it like an area developer. And they were selling these things where you could be the first franchisee in a city and develop it. And that was taken for a couple of the ones I was interested in. And I really wanted that because I kind of have this want to build empires sort of mindset. So that steered me away from those things. And what I really, really liked about CertaPro was the culture. And I got to know the Jeff Bean, who I think you know, and I got to know a lot of the people on the team. Fly out, of course, for the, I think we call it D-Day, Discovery Day. I don't know if that's a common term in the industry for all franchises, but
they've shifted it to more like Confirmation Day, and now there's a bunch of names, but it's all the same thing. It's
right.
The conclusion of the due diligence process, right?
Right. So I go out and I feel like I found my people, really good quality people who have high character. And the feeling I got was they cared about me and it cared about me being successful. And that culture has stayed true for the, I'm closing in on my 10-year anniversary. So that was a good decision. The other reason I like CertaPro, and I worked with a really good franchise broker, like someone like you, who guided me through the process. And they were sort of talking me through, you know, there are certain brick and mortar types of businesses that might have a cap on the revenue, but CertaPro didn't. We have this thing called scalability with one franchise, and you can really, you know, do as much as you're capable of doing with the zip codes that you own. But the way our franchise agreement is set up, there's sort of an unlimited potential, hypothetically, with where you can take the franchise. So that was part two of what made me excited about it.
That's excellent. So you've touched on a bunch of really great things here. So you're coming up on your 10-year anniversary. So that's a great segue into tell us what that journey sounds like and what it looks like. But before I dive into that, scalability is something that I talk to my candidates about all the time, because different business models scale differently, right? And so the benefit of, you mentioned earlier, the labor pool is a challenge with home services. It is. That's never going to change. It doesn't matter what the economy is doing and you know where we are, you know, in the labor pool. But there's something about scalability, right? So if you decided to be the area developer of the fitness for the older demographic, that would most likely be a retail based or some sort of brick and mortar location. And you have to build another store every time you want to grow your revenue, because there is sort of a relative cap to a brick and mortar location. So you scale that by multiple locations. But the home services business really allows you to build sort of as big as you want to get. And so share that journey kind of 10 years and maybe break it into years 1 through 3 and then, you know, 3 through 6, however you want to. You know, but share with the listeners what that scale looks like, because you've been remarkably successful in your journey. And for the listeners, guys, I have known Kevin for a long time, extremely capable individual and a very humble guy. So he's going to downplay all of his successes, and I'm going to try to pull that out of him.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. Yeah. So I guess, the first thing I think I'd go back to is, I think Musk has a quote that's floating around out there, and we got to throw in an Elon Musk quote about, if you're having apprehensions about starting your own business, well, then don't do it, you know. And we talked a little bit about the labor thing being a challenge. Starting your business, no matter what it is, it's going to be a challenge. It's not, I just want to clarify, it's not just the labor or home services. And you've got to go into it knowing that. I think that's an important thing, is you're going to have grit. You're going to have perseverance. Those are big words in our world. And yet I would say greatest thing I've ever done. It's certainly the most challenging thing, but it's never going to change it. Never going to go back. I don't regret my decision one iota. I'm so excited about living the vision that I very intentionally set for myself and my family. And so, but I wouldn't want to sugarcoat, like, it's tough. It's got its moments. And yet it also has these moments where you can win that are, you're going to get these feelings of pride that you just couldn't get if you were a W-2 employee working for someone else, in my opinion. So I think the best way to explain my journey with CertaPro was I seemed to land on day one a little bit ahead of everyone else because of, who knows, Culver Woodcraft Camp when I was 12 years old. I don't know. I think it had a lot to do with that first job I had out of school. I already run a business where I knew how to look at a P&L. I already knew how to run a home services business. And a lot of the other guys just sort of showed up really kind of behind. So that helped a lot. I also bought a what's called a resale. So I bought an existing business. He had kind of got it off the ground. I bought it when it was just kind of, you know, the rocket ship is sort of still on the launch pad, so to speak. And yet he had created a bit of a customer base. So that was a little bit easier. But I certainly needed the support system that the franchise provided for that first 3 years. I had a weekly call with the vice president of CertaPro, and he was my air quotes general manager, and he was 25 years with CertaPro. I think he was with College Pro prior to that. I got very lucky there. I don't know if you've ever listened to that Guy Raz podcast, How I Built This, but he always asks these really famous entrepreneurs, how much does luck factor in to your success? And I still believe like preparation plus opportunity is better than luck. But I think that there certainly was a little bit of fortune, good fortune there that I got this certain person to guide me along my way in my first year. I joined a flight group, which for us, that means I'm part of a group where there's seven other franchise owner and a corporate assigned facilitator who we all met three times a year at an agreed upon location. And we'd talk about our businesses. And that was something within the CertaPro model that was really valuable to me. I learned a lot from the franchise owners. After I hit the 3 year mark, I sort of felt like I started to outgrow what the franchise model and the franchisor could provide. I was still getting support, but it just sort of started to dwindle as I started to get comfortable and learn a little bit about what to do. And I started creating my own systems. I started doing my own thing a little bit, not violating the franchise agreement or anything, just being creative. And then I started really relying on the flight group, and they started becoming where I got a lot of the other owners have a lot of knowledge because they failed forward. You know, if they're still in business, they've made the same mistake you're either going to make or have made, and they have good advice. And I really tapped into that and started to realize after a time that maybe at about the 7 year mark that I'd even outgrown the flight group. And I started thinking about where I wanted to go. And it's funny, David, I got to about the 6 year mark and I felt like I was on this treadmill. I think I was stuck at the same revenue level for 2 years in a row. And it wasn't a COVID created problem. It was a Kevin created problem. And you had to learn how to scale through other people. And that's when I started to hire really good people. And I came up with a really good process for hiring people. I have a very hire slowly process where my team jokingly calls it the gauntlet, which is their way of saying, I think it's a reference to a Native American tradition where the members of the tribe would run through the lineup and they'd hit people with sticks to see how tough they were. So they call it the gauntlet because it was a pretty tough interview process, but it became that way intentionally because I think hiring is the most important thing I do because I'm going to build and grow the business through talented teammates and employees that I have. So I think that's kind of where we got to. And as I near the 10 year mark, I'm now to the point where I'm saying I'm the general manager, the teams that I have need to run the business. And that part's really rewarding. I get to teach them what I learned as a 22 year old about how to, you know, do customer service and how to hire people. And it's really rewarding when you hire the right people and they want to learn and they want to grow and you get to pass that on. Going back a step, I think the other thing I'd say about scaling up, yes, CertaPro offers the scalability piece because we're home services, but I call it inorganic growth and organic growth. I also acquired two more franchises within the CertaPro system. So I did a little bit of both. I'm really, really growth minded. I'm you know, I see the value of when you grow, you can hire more people, which insulates me from the ground level. And I think that's an important thing for me. I have two young kids. I want to be able to coach basketball and be with them and do things. So I don't want to be the guy that's owner operator forever. And so I'm very intentional about this design. And so we grew the existing franchise I have by a lot, but then we bought two more franchises and now I own the whole city of Colorado Springs. And I would call that a little bit of inorganic acquisition that helped us grow. And so I think I'd want your listeners to know there's multiple ways to grow. You could buy 10 brick and mortar businesses or just focus on the one you have. And if it's a scalable business, you could grow it to as big as you want. And I've seen guys do it both ways.
That's a really good point. I call what you just described as the game within the game, right? So you have to be a franchisee to really have the insider knowledge that the guy just to the south of you is really thinking about selling, and maybe he's not running a great business anyway, and maybe you can buy it from him before he actually goes to market and puts it out on the street. So you got to be part of the franchise to recognize where the opportunities are within your market. And it's a really good idea to get to know all the other franchise owners in your market so that you can, that just naturally happens organically, right? And I see that over and over again. Talk to the listeners a little bit about, so you've got a really interesting journey and time frame because it's your 10-year anniversary, right? But separate the timetable from the revenue growth, right? So, because what you're describing, you know, hitting those plateaus and recognizing that, hey, my growth is a Kevin problem, not an industry problem or a CertaPro problem. Is that as you grow revenue, as you grow as a leader, or is it simply how much time it takes to get to these different milestones?
Yeah, I think I'd start with, and maybe this is apparent to everyone, but you really, if you're the owner operator, and when I first started, it was me and a part-time office manager, you're wearing every hat. And of course you're still wearing the husband, father hats, but I think you're wearing, you know, CFO, marketer, you know, solve the problems with the customer, you're solving, you know, sales guy. And if you're doing all of those things, in my opinion, you're not doing any of them really well. You're not doing them at a high level. And so things start to slip through the cracks. And after a while, you start to realize that you can't do it all on your own. You need to hire quality people. And so you start to give things away. And I think part of what I had to learn is I really can afford to hire a new person financially if we stay stagnant. And it was scary, but you have to make the hire and know I'm going to be good enough at leading this person that the revenue will come in the 6 months to 12 months after you hire that person. And it's kind of a leap of faith that you have to take, but you got to be good at coaching and leading that person. You've got to be great at holding them accountable to the expectations of the company so that they hit the metrics. And then that's how you start to grow. And I think you start to learn over time that you hire the person and the revenue comes and that's kind of how we started to scale up. And I think for
Kevin,
me,
you're making such a strong point. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to emphasize this. I just had this conversation with my operating partner in California. We are an area developer, as you mentioned earlier, for a pet concept. And this is so foreign, but it's also scary. And it's so true. You have to hire ahead of revenue. And sometimes you got to hire the person that might be more expensive than you really have budget for, et cetera. But that is the key to getting to where you are today, right? Where you are not in the business any longer, but you're running it like a CEO. The other question that I had as it relates to this scaling growth, when you started the business, you wore all the hats. My question that I thought of is, how many times have you painted a house or a room in the 10 years that you've owned the company, have you ever done that? Did you do that every day when you started the business? Give the listeners a sense of what does wearing all the hats mean.
Yeah, I never painted or did. I mean, I got paint on my clothes accidentally, you know, multiple times, but I was never really on a ladder painting. You know, I'd always just get the painters to do that. But I mean, I was the mechanic for the fleet that we had. I was, you know, I remember one time I was scrubbing paint off of a flagstone at a $3 million house with a toothbrush and a heater and a, you know, paint thinner, and just trying to figure out ways to get sort of correct mistakes. So, I mean, I think there's no limit other than painting to the things that I probably did. So yeah, I mean, the thing I would say is, the guy who owns another CertaPro, who I have a lot of respect for up in Boulder, Colorado, went to Princeton. It always makes me feel good that a guy who went to an Ivy League school bought the same franchise. He and I have a lot of discussions, and we talk a lot about, it's okay to do some of that ground level day-to-day owner operator stuff for me for a few years. And I could do it when I was in my 40s. But it became very clear to me that my definition of success would be that when I grew to a big enough point where I could move myself out of that role and I would be in the strategic planner, go hire really talented people. And behind the scenes, I would pull strings, whether it was with marketing or with sales, I would just be a really good coach and leader and strategizer for the business. And that made us such a better company, because there's this book called Rocket Fuel, where the book suggests either you're a visionary or you're the implementer. And, you know, the examples they give is Henry Ford was the visionary, but he couldn't really make his ideas go without the implementer. So I'm the visionary. I test very high on idea orientation on the caliper. I come up with these ideas, but I need people to help me implement them. But if I'm in the day to day, I would not be happy, and nor would we be successful. So it was almost like required for guys like me and this other guy I was referring to, that we got out of the day to day, or I would have changed franchises. I'd still be an entrepreneur, but I would have sold and got out and done something else, because I didn't want to, in the, you know, McDonald's is a franchise. I didn't want to be behind the cash register or flipping burgers after a certain time frame. I wanted to be out of that and coaching and leading the other leaders. I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And honestly, I think the reason I was glad that you were willing to be on the show is you demonstrate what everybody really wants. Right. And so, you get in the business, get your hands dirty to the extent that you can learn and teach and coach other people, and then pull yourself out of the day to day. And then you can focus on growth and scale and strategy. And frankly, that's way more fun, is it not?
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. It's a lot of
fun. Excellent. So, you've had some wins along the way. So maybe share with our audience, tell them the story about the award that you were nominated for, and maybe some wins as you, like, maybe plateaus or wins that got you to the next level, and maybe some challenges that, you know, you could share with folks so they could avoid them in their own journey.
Yeah. Last year, 2021, we were actually nominated, one of five franchises in the CertaPro system to be nominated for what they call Certa Cup, which is just our way of saying franchisee of the year. So that was a huge honor and recognition. It certainly was a team award, and I felt like the team earned that. And that was fun. And then I think from a growth standpoint and a scaling up standpoint, to answer your question there, it's been fun to just kind of keep setting our sights on what's next. And so we do something called Certa Health, where we break out of the office for like a 2-day sort of function, and we plan ahead and we start talking about things like what matters most and who are we as a company, and, you know, what are our core values and fun things like that. And the last time we did this was just a couple of weeks ago, and the team set the sort of, you know, compass for our ship. It really was fun. That wasn't just me anymore talking about strategy. We had other people on the team going, hey, this is really important to us. We want this, or we don't want to be known as that kind of company. Let's change how we're doing this. And it was really big picture strategy stuff. And the cool thing was, and this is Lencioni, Wickman, these famous authors, we combined some of their suggestions into something called Certa Health. Well, we came up with this 10-year plan of $34 million in revenue. And it's fun to sort of know that we have something much bigger. And so what I'm most excited about now isn't where we are, it's where we're going. And I think I've talked to you a lot about, hey, what's my next? You know, and certainly I can see us growing through the Starter Pro franchise system. Again, there's some opportunities out there where we could buy another franchise and scale up that way. But I also am curious about commercial real estate now and housing my Starter Pros out of buildings that I own. That's a common trend in the Starter Pro owner organization. And then possibly, I think you call it very correctly, stacking businesses, but having other businesses, you know, that are similar to Starter Pro that maybe we house out of the same building that I own, and we look at different revenue streams. And I'm so excited about that because it means that my team gets the blessing of running the business and learning how to run a business, which should help them and their families. But it also means that I get to honor the part about me that's about growing, and I sometimes call it empire building, but it's a lot of fun to keep growing and keep looking for new opportunities. And I'm certainly excited about that. And I don't have a loss of passion for keeping this thing going, because I certainly think it obviously means good things for me and my family, but I really want to continue this process of like, hey, why don't you run this business? Just like I got to do for that franchise system back when I was in my early 20s. So I'm very excited about the what's next, probably more than anything right now, thinking about that what's next.
That sounds really fun. So let's assume you get the business to $35 million or whatever that big BHAG looks like. What are you going to do with your time and your money? I mean, what's next for Kevin? Assuming that the team continues the growth trajectory, you're coaching sort of it like anything else, right? You build momentum with that coaching, and you don't need to coach the key employees as much. They get better at what they're doing. You know, what are you going to do with more time and more money?
Yeah, good question. You know, I think there's the selfish part to that answer, where definitely spending time with the family and, you know, spending time where we grew up, you know, you and I grew up, and not many people covet living in the cornfields of Indiana, but I certainly want to spend more time there with my extended family. But, you know, I think along the way, there's a business that you could get that would be more geared towards a philanthropic kind of nature, where you can give back. Part of the way I give back is, hey, run my business, you know, get to learn how to do this for yourself. But I think if we get bigger and bigger and bigger, I keep seeing us just being able to give back to the people who work for our business. I love the idea of, you're an assistant manager or a vice president here. Why don't you go be the lead guy over at this business that we own, and just switch teams a little bit, but technically you're still on the same team. You're on Kevin's, you know, extended team. And so I like that idea where I get to continue to help the people who have helped me get where I am today.
That's really, really cool. So this, you've covered a couple of different things. I'm battling two different questions in my head, so apologize for the pause. So you talked about scaling and stacking, and kind of how to do that. Walk me through kind of what's next in that evolution.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I would rely more on someone like you, you know. And I think you're in such this unique position of, you know, being able to have this sort of firsthand experience of, I was a franchise owner, right? And that a lot of franchise brokers can't say that. The other thing is, you're so kind about the way you use your words. You're not your personality is so easy to work with. So you're very kind about saying, here's what, you know, rather than just blurting out, don't do that. You're very careful about the way you say, I strongly advise you to do this. And you're good about that. But I think that the fact that you as a franchise broker are around all these other franchises, you get to see what works and what doesn't, and which the good best ones are. And often for me, it's a culture fit, and you'd probably be able to go, these guys are great, and these guys are kind of funny, I wouldn't work with them. So I think I'm okay with tapping into what I call my network as I think about me stacking or me doing something different, I've never done commercial real estate before. So I'm going to talk to 10 people who have done it 10 times, but I'm also going to talk to you a bunch. So I hope you're okay with me saying, I'm just going to call you. I'm not quite sure how to do my what's next outside of CertaPro. Of course, within CertaPro, I could see there was a guy who came to talk to us who actually was a corporate employee for McDonald's. And he shared this fun story about how 20 years ago, McDonald's would only let a franchise owner own two or three McDonald's in the same city. In fact, they had to be really close to each other. And then they realized not all franchise owners are equal. And so they started to realize that the very best guys learn how to run these businesses really well, really profitably. They bring in more business for the franchisor. They hire really well. They build a leadership team, and they do a good job. And so the McDonald's guy shared that now they let these franchise owners buy 60 McDonald's, and they can do it anywhere in the country because they just know that these guys are going to make those things go because they're really good at hiring great people and retaining those people through culture. And of course, they've got their systems down and they understand the book side of it. So I love that concept. I could run a CertaPro in Missoula, Montana, because I know the systems and I don't have to physically be there. I could put a guy there. We could do, you and I are on a Zoom call. We could do a Zoom call every week and I could coach him through a lot. And the phone could ring in one of my other offices. And so to me, there's that scalability in a different way, the game within the game, right? Like that you're referring to. So there's that part of it that I think I could do without having to ask anybody for advice. But if it's me going and doing something like a roofing company, I'd be calling you or friends in my network about what I do.
That's a really good point. 10 years ago, when you started your CertaPro, the technology, it just in general has gotten really, really good small business technology. And so this idea of scale has really changed over the years. Kevin, you've added so much value to today's call. One of the things that I share with the candidates that I'm working with is I'm going to help you ask the franchisor all the right kinds of questions. And it's important to me that you talk to actual franchise owners and ask them all the right questions. So the last question I'll ask you before we wrap things up today is, if you were to share with our audience, what would be a really good question to ask the franchisor to sort of separate the sales pitch from reality, and or maybe you ask franchisees, what would you say to that? What would be a good thing to kind of hone in on what's really important for somebody considering franchising for the first time?
Yeah. And so is this like prospective franchise buyer asking another a franchisee or the franchisor questions?
Either one. Okay.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'd caution anyone going through this process sort of about is the franchisor is going to probably marry up a prospective candidate with the top 5% of the franchisee organization. And they're going to probably say positive things and keep it more professional and positive. But if there's a way to kind of get down to the, you know, asking those questions of both the franchisor and the franchisee, or what are some things that you think this franchise struggles with? What are some things that kind of keep you up at night? What are some things that, you know, are challenges in the industry and challenges for you in particular? How do you function versus the competition? Who is the competition? I think I'd want to get to the bottom of what the naughty stuff is, because that's the stuff that's either going to be stuff that you have to realize every business has naughty stuff. You just have to realize, or maybe sort of decide is a better word. Can I deal with that naughty stuff in that franchise in that industry? Or is it too much for me based on who you are as a person? I think I'd kind of want to get to the bottom of the most challenging things.
That's such a great point of view. Yes, you want to talk to the top 5% and the top performers, because that's, you want to know how good the opportunity can be, but you absolutely need to also talk to bottom performers so that you get a sense of kind of how bad is bad, right? So, and then kind of make your buying decision based on, if you're just Joe Blow six pack franchisee, is that still good enough, right? Is that, and that's really good advice.
The other thing about the, just sorry to interrupt you there, but I just thought it was really important. Like the guys who are in the bottom 20% in any franchise system are there for a reason. It has nothing to do with the franchisor. It's because of their own inability to follow the proven model, to think outside the box when the bottle stops, right? And usually those guys in the bottom 20% are the most vocal about this sucks, this isn't working. Well, why did the other 80% figure it out? And so you got to be careful about who you're hearing things from. I still think you want to find out from the top guys what are the most challenging things. But if you end up accidentally talking to a guy who's complaining about everything, there are people in life that are the, I think we call them Karens. And my cousin likes to say it's not the arrows, it's the Indian, which your people can edit out if that's politically incorrect. But I do work for a home services company, and we don't know much about political correctness in our world. So,
well, it's the pendulum swings one way and then swings the other. We just happen to be in a time period where the pendulum is on one side. So, Kevin, thank you for your insight. Super great focus, and what a wonderful story. Thanks for being on the show today, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, David. I definitely appreciate our friendship, and I really love that our paths are, now we're obviously talking a lot, and it's been great to get your advice. You're such a great person. Anybody thinking about buying a franchise, you'd be lucky to get David on your team. I've worked with other folks in his arena, and no one's better than David. And so that's my little pitch for you, man.
Thank you very much, Kevin. You didn't need to say that. Great to have you on the show. If anybody wants to learn a little bit more about my consulting practice, www.franchiseyourfreedom, or simply send me an email at dweaver@franchoice.com. This has been another episode of the Franchise Your Freedom podcast with David Weaver, where we focus on ideas that can lead to your impact on your community and your family by creating your freedom through franchise ownership. If you found value in what we discussed today, please hit the subscribe button or follow us on your favorite platform.